Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday Morning Show, where ASI's most outspoken editors talk promo products. I'm Andy Cohen, editor of Counselor Magazine, and I have a crazy cast of characters here in the studio with me today. Kathy Houston, how are you?
I'm good, but as you know, I can't talk. So.
Yes, Kathy's having some trouble speaking this morning, so if we limit her microphone, then
you'll
we'll
know why.
I'm obviously having some trouble speaking as well. The words are not coming easily to us today.
Am I the only one who's loquacious at the table like that?
Michelle Bell, the loquacious one, is also with us. Michelle, how are you today?
I'm great. Thank you.
Joe Haley.
Yes, Andrew. How are you today?
Wow, Joe just put on his radio voice and said, how are you today?
Proper modulation over here.
He's got a big boy voice.
How are you feeling, Joe?
I'm feeling good. I got a stiff neck. I can't turn.
Well, he stopped the presses on that one.
You really are 80. You know that, right?
Have you voted yet today, Joe?
No, I'm going to vote after work.
Oh, okay. Michelle, vote.
And after work?
Kathy? Who's there to vote for? I don't even know.
Oh, there's Kathy
Houston. There's someone running for office in my area who has door hangers, but she got faulty door hangers because they don't have the little slit and they can't put them on the door. And they're always like on my front step, on my lawn. It's like, stop littering. So I'm voting against her.
Because of that.
I'm standing up.
Wait, you're voting against her because she's using promotional products in an interesting way?
No, there's more to it.
Oh, okay. Good. We didn't want to hear that out of you, Joe Haley. All right, we also have Mina on the tech board and Vinny getting ready to take your calls this morning. Give us a ring at 215-953-4979. We are talking about branding and creative ways that companies can build their brand. So if you have any questions about that or comments on how you've done that, give us a ring again at 215-953-4979. And Joe, if we take their call on this show here this morning, what will they be getting?
They will be getting, Andy, the radio prize pack. That includes the $25 Visa gift card. We also have the finger puppets in there, the hand fans, and we're going to send you two drinkware products from our friends at ETS.
What is that voice?
And you'll get a recording of Joe's voice talking radio style.
You are something that happens on a summer's eve, and the bag it came in sometimes with that voice.
Okay.
That's very funny. Michelle brings the jocularity today.
And Joe Radio Voice.
Yes,
what
maybe.
Else is on tap for today's show?
Well, we're going to be looking at promoting employees. Is it better to favor seniority over superiority? We also have five ways to boost innovation within.
Kathy, whose microphone happens to be on, just claimed that topic is stupid. So I look forward to discussing that with one Kathy Houston.
Right,
sorry, Joe, go.
Okay, we're going to get five ways to boost innovation without breaking the bank, five tactics to make text marketing work. We're also going to look at reasons customers will pay more. We have nine truths that bosses hide from their employees, a few other topics here on our agenda. We also have our favorite things, but let's start the whole show off with the industry news in 60 seconds. Andy.
All right, thank you, Joe. We begin this morning with Olympic news. Ralph Lauren has announced that its uniforms for the U.S. Olympic team members competing in Russia in February will be made in the USA. Both the U.S. Olympic Committee and the clothing maker took heat last year when it was found that the uniforms were made outside of the U.S. On to international news now. In a surprising reversal, China-based e-commerce company Alibaba Group may now hold its long-awaited initial public offering in Hong Kong. The company announced last month that it would house its IPO in New York, but now says it is reconsidering Hong Kong after regulators there changed governance rules. On to manufacturing news now. Despite the federal government shutdown, the U.S. manufacturing sector expanded at its quickest rate in more than 2 years in October, according to a new report from the Institute for Supply Management. General economic news now. In a positive sign for the U.S. economy, U.S. small business borrowing rose in September. With delinquencies and interest rates low, analysts believe future business borrowing could increase as well. And finally, make sure to check out the latest episode of The Joe Show and program today. Joe, what is hot for today?
We have a pretty cool award that would we have a pretty cool award. Kathy's rubbing off on everyone. We have a pretty cool award that would make a great award to give to companies at the end of the year, your best clients, your best vendors, or also for your employees. We are sitting amongst a few employees of the year.
Yeah, everybody but me.
That's true. That is true.
Very cool. Thank you, Joe. Make sure to check out that Joe Show in Promogram today and so much more. Kathy, maybe someday. All right.
I won't hold my breath, though.
Before we head to your calls, We are going to hear from Leighton Lee on line one, who has our product safety minute of the week. Leighton, how are you?
Good morning, ASI. I hope everybody's doing well, notwithstanding the speech
impediments.
Yeah, we are struggling a little bit, so Leighton, maybe you can pick up the crew.
Well, I don't know, because I oftentimes need a speech therapist myself, so we'll do what we can here this morning. My topic of today is how to handle special testing. Now, many of us know that suppliers are being requested daily to provide test reports on their product, and most suppliers do a pretty decent job of providing those test reports. However, there are two special cases that that suppliers may not be able to accommodate readily. One is when an end buyer requires special tests that go above and beyond the mandatory testing that is required under CPSI, FDA, or whatever. Or the end buyer intends to ship products to other countries around the world, such as Europe, Japan, or even, God forbid, Brazil, where they have some of the toughest requirements in the world. So what do we do with those special test costs? Who eats them? Well, typically the supplier will pay for the testing that is necessary to meet mandatory U.S. and maybe Canada requirements. But that's it. The suppliers cannot afford to have the testing done for additional tests that might may be required by the end buyers, either domestically or internationally. Should distributors eat the cost? Not really, because there's not enough margin in these products, especially if it's a small order. So how do we take care of the distributor, and how do we take care of the end buyer? It's through great communication, as always. We've harped on this all year about communicating properly between distributors and buyers and suppliers. So the distributors have the onus of determining what special tests are required for a particular order from their end buyer. And end buyers typically have an idea, and that information should be passed down to the supplier so all three parties can understand what tests are required, how they're going to accomplish it, and who's going to pay for it. Usually the special tests are borne by, the cost of the special testing is borne by the distributor, and the distributor adds on an incremental cost to the cost of goods. Hopefully the order is big enough to make that happen. So the tip of the day is communications. Ask the right questions between distributors and buyers so that the supplier and the distributor can work these things out. That's the Product Safety Minute for this week. I hope everybody has a great linguistic kind of week.
All right. Thanks, Leighton. Thanks for the tip, and we'll speak to you soon. All right. We are going to head to the phones now to go to our call-in topic, which is how to build your company's brand. We have some creative ways to do that, and we're here to answer your questions. So give us a ring at 215-953-4979. On line two, we have Wayne Seymour. Wayne, how are you this morning?
I'm good. How are you guys doing today?
Doing good. What's your question for the hosts?
I own a distributorship in an area that has about five other promo companies within a 30-mile radius. Can you guys give me some tips on how I can set myself apart from the competition?
I'd say you should move. I'm kidding. Joe, what do you think?
First, we're talking about how do you build your brand. You got to decide what your brand is. I mean, what type of company are you? Are you a marketing company? Are you an advertising company that also offers promotional products? Are you just going to sell promotional products? Are you going to have a special needs? So you have to decide what your brand is, and then you have to go out and sell that to your clients. What does your competition do? What do you do that separates you from them? What do you do differently than them? And that's the things you have to focus. But you got to know what your brand is first.
You know, sometimes companies say that crafting a mission statement helps with that. Mm-hmm. You know, once you decide what you are, then you can go from there. I think once you've done that, what you should do is come up with a creative name and logo. I mean, think of what Brand Fuel has done with theirs.
Right.
They've just taken it and
definitely
tied it in with everything.
Yeah, and I would just add on to that to what Joe and Michelle were basically emphasizing, the idea of trying to figure out what your point of differentiation is. Go ask your customers. They're the ones who are operating in that market too, and are probably hearing from the other distributors that are in that area. Ask them why they do business with you. You know, assuming that you have some long-term loyal customers, find out what they think is, you know, the best quality. Why do they come back to you? And then use that as kind of the point of differentiation moving forward. We are having some trouble talking here. Go ahead, Joe.
You know, one of the things I would say, pay attention to advertising on TV. And if you're watching football now, these Bud Light commercials, or is it Miller Light? One of the
obviously, it's made an impression.
It's Miller Light. People don't drink it because it tastes good. They drink it because they're a crazy fan that does crazy things
right.
That helps their football team. They are creating a brand image there. This is what Miller Lite represents. The Miller Lite drinker is this person. So it's not necessarily how good the beer tastes, how cheap it is, whatever. So think about that and then use those types of ideas with your company.
There you go. All right, Wayne, hopefully that helps out. Hang on the line so Vinny can get your information for your Visa gift card. All right, on line four, we have Stanley. Stanley, how are you today?
I am great. How are you guys?
Hey,
we're doing fantastic. What's your question for the host today?
Well, this is this subject is very close to me because I've always said that we choose to keep our brand out there. We choose, instead of using self-promotions with our name on it like cheap pens, I try to get my name on my live orders. And that's the best way I have found to keep my name out there. So instead of boxes going out with a vendor's name on it, and the product's going out with the vendor's name on it, we've creatively found ways to make it so that our name has gone on it. And the reason I always like hearing from ETSC is Leighton Lee is because they're one of the companies that when we do an order, we have our stickers put on the bottom of the mugs. Or when we do our shirt orders, we have the boxes going out in boxes that have my company's logo on it. And I've said this for a long time, and Michelle Bell called me one time when they had an end-user show for a very large distributor, and the vendors were bragging about their brand, and she told me because she heard the customer saying, listen, we really don't care about your brand as much as we care about the distributor who's telling us to use your products.
Yeah, that's true.
We have a sign that we've had in our office for years that says, the secret to creativity is knowing how to hide your sources, and that's a quote from Albert Einstein. So we have found that when we work with vendors that want to partner with us and we build these great relationships, the vendors find that when they help us put our logo on the actual live product very carefully and with approvals, that we're getting more referrals and we're getting our brand out there and we're getting our name out there and we're getting the repeat impression also with the orders. And then on top of that, the same vendors are getting more orders. So it's like a win-win-win.
Sure, and I think as often as you can get your company's name in front of as many people as possible is the key. You're selling to the end user, so the more you can get your name out there and build your brand through that mechanism, I think is just better off for your company.
Yeah, we use a hat manufacturer that told us. I asked him if he'll put my labels in his hats, and he said, "Sure, because if I put your label in, you're going to pay for that label." I don't have to put my label in, and I save money. I mean, the vendors are really when they hear the idea behind it, and they start to really look at the fallout and what it does. We've had great acceptance to it. I just did some hats that were brought to me on a referral because they got my hat from another guy and it had my label in it. So that's what we're doing. And I would ask you, what other ideas do you have as far as helping us brand our name and ways I may not have heard of?
Joe? Break the silence in the room.
Break
Joe?
The silence while we're all sitting here thinking. You know, it's like I would agree with what Michelle said earlier. You know, find that creative name, find that creative logo for your company, and then incorporate that into certain things. I mean, she used Brand Fuel as an example, and they have a rocket ship, and they have a variety of different kind of rocket ship logos, and they incorporate it into everything, and they like to buy rocket ship promotional products, and they send out things that are, you know, rocket ship based. So, I mean, it ties into that brand, and, you know, after a while, you might not know that that's, you know, Brand Fuel, but, you know, hey, you're the rocket ship company, you know, and you guys do some cool things.
I think it's also about building a culture and cultivating an experience that people can be a part of. I mean, you look at a company like Victoria's Secret. Here's a little secret for everybody. Their clothes
are
not.
Yes, I do.
Well, hey there, Stanley. Their clothes are not the best made clothes going. They really aren't. Why do women gravitate to that? Because of the brand of Victoria's Secret. Because they've created this image of glamour and luster and allure and a certain cachet around the brand.
Mm-hmm. Sure. All right, Stanley, well, thanks for the call.
Not Victoria's Secret. Those are great quality catalogs.
Thanks for the call, and thanks for the Victoria's Secret plug. I'm sure they appreciate it. All right, on line three, we have Robert McKenzie. Robert, how are you today?
Yeah, hello. How are you guys doing today?
We're doing great. How are you?
Good. Good. You guys were just talking about brand fuel, and that's what I wanted to ask about. Those guys are so cool, and they've done such a great job of branding themselves in a creative way, and they're not that big. And it's hard for a business-to-business to do any kind of branding at any size, but how can a relatively small distributor emulate that on any kind of affordable scale?
Well, I think like some of the things that we've been talking about here today, it's a matter of becoming as active as possible. So, yeah, using social media, they're good users of social media, but I think that there's a lot in this market. That can be one way to take your kind of point of differentiation and then, you know, just emphasize that as much as possible. Then self-promos. You know, use products in this industry that relate to your brand and your message. You know, those things don't have to be expensive. And, you know, social media and online marketing certainly doesn't have to be at all. But using self-promos that relate to your brand messaging, I think that gets your point across in your local market as well as anything.
You know, the brand fuel guys are also known for being very involved in their respective communities, mm-hmm. Robert in Virginia and Danny in North Carolina, as far as charities,
right.
Nonprofits. And that really has helped boost their brand as well.
Yeah. All right, Robert, thanks for the call, and hang on the line so we can get your information for your radio prize pack. We're going to go and take a break to hear from our first show sponsor today, AIA, but when we get back, we're going to continue the conversation about branding.
Where do you see your business in the next 5 years? Do you believe that you have all the support and tools to reach your goals? With AIA, your vision can become reality. AIA understands that not all businesses are the same. They work with you to craft a customized individual plan that develops your business in a way that's best for you and the professional life you want to create, regardless of where your business is in its life cycle. When you become part of the AIA community, you have the resources, talent, and expertise of a robust organization at your fingertips, all while keeping your business and your clients. The offer? A simple agreement with no non-compete provisions, no money up front, no monthly or transactional fees, and no technology fees. One simple rate, period. Contact AIA today, 877-212-7324 or www.aiacommunity.com.
All right, welcome back to the Tuesday Morning Show, where we are talking about branding and debating and discussing creative ways that companies can build their brands today. Michelle, we had some interesting comments on our Facebook page. What did you find there?
Yep, Eric Campbell says that the first thing to know about your brand is that your brand isn't just comprised of the things you say about your company, your messaging, your art assets, your design, your blog. It's also built on the experiences of your customers, which I think is a really great point. I mean, their perception of you, it's like you said, Andy, about talking to your clients, what they think is, you know, the pertinent points of your company. What do you bring to the table?
I really think that that's a vital point that companies often miss.
That it's your customers building the brand themselves. Yeah.
In a sense. And also, what is their view of you? What is the biggest reason that they do business with you? And, you know, your most loyal customers, if they answer that question and there's some themes in those answers, that's really your brand. Whether you want to believe it or not, that's your brand because those are the people who are buying from you and they're doing it on a regular basis. So that's what they're buying. That's why they're buying from you.
Yep. Ryan Shad says, consistency is key. You want to convey the same image across all media, whether promo, print, or social. Don't send mixed messages. David Garthwaite says, you've got to give to build your brand. Community, charities, nonprofits are always looking for volunteer help and contributions. Giving is the best way to build your brand, which is like what we were saying about Brand Fuel, which has been a key to their success. And Laurie Shea at Motivator says, while I agree, of course, with giving back, the best way to build your brand is to stay fresh and exciting. Keep up with social media and put yourself out there. Create videos, tweet, even run a contest on Facebook. Make people want to see what you're doing next.
And Motivators is great at all of that.
They are.
Yeah.
They are indeed.
Very cool. All right, check out that on our Facebook page. We have another caller on the line, Daniel Johnson on line one. Daniel, how are you today?
I'm doing awesome, fantastic. I was just thinking about what this means with respect to what we do here at Cincy Apparel. And I'm listening to what you guys have already been talking about. One of the things that really stands clear in my mind is the need to really be to understand the brand story. And as a salesperson here in the front of our store here at Cincy Apparel, I love talking about the story about how the founders and the owners of the company started the company, and then just being able to learn what customer stories are and sharing all the good work that we do for our customers and helping them as I help them to tell their stories. And then I think it says something for customers, and I've really noticed the in some of the conversations that I've had with customers about building that trust with them and knowing that they have a valued partner, that we're not just looking to take a T-shirt order from them. And we also are on the public intersection, but they, even though we've been here for about a year and a half, some people in the neighborhood still don't know that we're here. And so one of the things I like to do is I like to carry these wristbands around me with my company's name on them and just kind of pass them out as I go through like a drive-through or if I'm at a gas station or whatnot. And then people are like, oh, you guys are right over here. Yeah, and it's just a very fun thing that people can hold on to.
That's cool. Great. I think that those are great ideas. Daniel, do you find that that telling your company's story, kind of sharing the history, is something that engages new customers?
Well, I know one of the things that I think as far as the branding is concerned is that you have to be sold on what it is that you're doing. And so as people can see, share the enthusiasm and say, you know what, these are two guys that here at Cincy Apparel who, you know, 5 years ago decided that they wanted to get into the T-shirt business, and they've been working ever since here wanting to have a local presence as well as online, you know, and around the company and around the country. People have been seeing that you know what, a lot of times, especially here in our local market, people are like, you know what, I really resonate with that. And then kind of always goes back to just really understanding why you exist as a brand, you know, and being able to start with why. And as people hear what you're saying, just like, you know what, I definitely believe in what you're believing. And then that'll help them to align with your cause.
I just wanted to tell him that we really appreciate the time and effort it took for you to dress up each of our hand fans and pose with them. That was
exactly. Exactly. I shared those pictures. I don't even. I like the one. I guess I had the one with Joe wearing our Cincy Apparel T-shirt. You know, on one of our mannequin models with the fan.
Very cool, Daniel. Well, thanks for giving us a call today and sharing your ideas. We appreciate it. All right, Kathy. So you termed this topic earlier today as, quote, I believe, stupid.
I did. Because...
So now we're going to make you talk about it. Promoting employees, is it better to favor seniority over superiority?
Well,
what do you think?
This is basically promoting based solely on seniority. Do you think that's a good idea?
No. That's a terrible idea.
Though I have worked at companies where they've done that, and they did it here back in the heyday.
You know what? That is true. And
there are companies that have like grades. You're a grade A employee and grade B and grade, you know, C and upwards and stuff.
We used to have that here, too.
Yeah.
I remember we were on the A team, Joe. Anyway, that's besides the point.
I was Mr. T.
That's the way
I didn't like to fly. They knocked me out.
Anyway, okay, so seniority-based promotions is a terrible idea because they stifle motivation, obviously, among the
well,
people
yeah.
that work really hard. They're thinking as long as I meet job requirements, all they have to do is wait their turn. They stifle initiative because people are thinking, why should I step up and volunteer? It doesn't help me at all. And, of course, it fuels resentment because there are some people that have a really strong work ethic and will still work really hard, but they do resent those people that are being favored. They also hinder recruiting because no superstar wants to work in such an environment. And let me tell you something, word gets around about your company doing these kind of things. And they create a culture of mediocrity, okay, because of all the above.
Well,
so,
yeah, it does.
Don't you agree it's a stupid topic?
You don't
topic?
Have to do well to get anywhere at places like that.
That's right.
It's not necessarily a stupid topic, but it is a stupid idea.
It's a stupid way to run the show.
If you are... Yeah, if you're just promoting people on the basis of tenure at the company, then right. you're missing the boat mm-hmm. on lots of things, including motivation. All right, we talk a lot about creativity and innovation on this show. Michelle, you have some ways that that companies can boost innovation without breaking the bank.
I do, and we're going to post this on our website at asicentral.com/radio. The point of this article is that you don't have to be like Google. You know, Google famously has its own chef that makes meals, and I know you guys were just at Sanmar, and they have, you know, chefs as well, right?
Yeah, and that is awesome.
And it is awesome. And there's companies that have, you know, ping pong tables and game rooms and stuff like that. They're not cheap, though. And if you're a small company, you may not have the resources to do that. So there are some tips for things that you can do to compete where you're not laying out that much money for things like that. First of all, and this may sound a little counterintuitive, but don't have super, super over-the-top perks and amenities. Do things like improve your employees' equipment and workspace, things that will make their everyday lives easier and make them be able to do their jobs easier, because providing them with that sense of accomplishment, I mean, you can't put a price tag on that, and it'll make them want to work harder. Next, and conversely, I would say that leaders often err on the side of too much cost cutting. Too much belt tightening can undermine the progress of important projects in a company. And when people feel like they don't have access to resources to do their job, they won't be enthusiastic about doing it. So you have to find that happy medium between, you know, not spending too much and not being too crazy and, you know, with the perks and the personal chefs and the masseuses and the games and everything like that, but not being too much of a budget freak. And next, use more resources as goals. Some leaders tempt teams with the promises of more resources if they meet their goals, but what if they don't?
Right.
Then they become demoralized very quickly. So you have to kind of fine-tune that and find ways to motivate them that doesn't hinge on them meeting, you know, a set number of goals, because, you know, some may be a little bit more unattainable than others.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, we have a feature in Counselor coming up in the December issue exactly on this topic. It's on innovation and how to create a kind of innovative culture at your company. And I think the biggest point is that it really can be free. You don't mm-hmm. need all those other things that you were talking about.
They're nice. I mean, who doesn't want a personal chef?
Right. Yeah. But the key is communication and giving people the freedom to do their jobs in a way that that they can come up with ideas on their own and then can implement them. And then also, by the way, can fail. That's almost the biggest point that's made in this article, is that, you know, innovation, if every innovative idea worked, it wouldn't be called innovation.
Sure.
There is some failure in there, and, mm-hmm. you know, that has to be understood by management. So that kind of culture is vital. Go ahead, Joe.
Well, I was going to say, just on the point about the personal chef, a friend of mine, her company, the president hired a personal pastry chef to come in and do desserts. And this person was bringing in $45,000 a year as a salary to go in there and to bake. 5 days a week just to bake cookies and cakes and stuff, and the person was terrible. They finally got rid. Lasted 3 years, though.
Wow.
3 years.
See, to me, that seems like good. And I love pastries as much as the next person, but
so,
that seems like an unnecessary expense that you could take that $45,000 over, you know, 3 years and put it into, you know, allocate it to be used
bartender.
More effectively.
Mixologist.
All right, Joe. Text marketing. It is new thing.
We have time for it. Okay.
Yeah, we do.
Okay, good,
That some companies are doing, but probably not too many. So
no,
offer some tips here on how text marketing can work.
Okay, raise your hand if you've received a text, you know, the marketing thing on your phone. Just recently, within the last 2 months, I've started to get a few of them.
I have.
Okay, but they say that they're more effective than doing email marketing. The open rate for a promotional text message is 95% to 97%.
Yeah, I believe that, because you do open your text messages.
Right. Open rates for email marketing is about 20%. So they say, how do you do it effectively? There's five things you need to do. I'm only going to give you three of them. One is to make sure customers really do want your text and that you can prove that. So in other words, you have to have that opt-in opportunity. Give them a chance to say, yes, I want to receive that. And if you're going off of a list and send it to them, make sure that they have the easy way to get out of it. You know, I've gotten some that I don't want, so you just have to text stop back to the number, and mm-hmm. they take it right off the list. You never get another one. One other thing is to be considerate. You know, we don't think that on the East Coast, you know, we're 4 hours ahead of the West Coast, and that our marketing
we're three hours
ahead of the West Coast. We're just out there.
We're six hours ahead of Hawaii.
There you go. But the point is that, you know, you don't want to send it at a time where it's too early in the morning or too late at night for one of the areas. So they say, you know, a good rule of thumb is you don't text before 9 a.m. You don't text after 9 p.m. So, and be conscious that if you're doing a nationwide text program, that you know when people are getting it. Yeah, I'm having a rough time here. Also, the other thing is to think outside the alphabet, they say. So, in other words, text messaging, you know, it's all, you know, letters and stuff, but you don't have to just use characters. You can actually embed video in there, and you can have images as well. So it doesn't just have to be a text message. So we're going to post this on the website, and you can see all the other reasons.
Okay, very cool. This. We have just enough time for our favorite things. Michelle, lead us off.
Mine is from, who is it from? Minya USA, and it's ASI 71370, and it is, it's this cool little industrial design. It's a USB port that holds four USB outlets, and it has LED lights that changes color according to your mood, apparently.
Oh, yours will always be black.
Oh, right.
Like your soul.
All right, Joe, you're up.
This is a power bank, and you see it's got a pretty cool design. It comes with a little pouch, and it comes with its own cord that's rechargeable. So you plug this in, you charge this, and you can charge your cell phone. Works with BlackBerries, but not for very long because that company's going under. iPhone, Samsung phones, and any other USB-powered device. It's great for people on the go, business people. You go on a trip. If you're someone who enjoys the outdoors, you're going camping, it's always good to have one of these on hand. This is from NVS Promo Designs, ASI 74741. You can find them online at www.nvspromo.com.
Very cool. Kathy, you get the last word.
Okay, well, Andy, you have the smell of cookies baking in your house all the time because your wife is a baker.
True.
But for those of us who don't, I like the tumbler-type Christmas cookie-scented candle from Yankee Candle Company, which I freaking love, and it's ASI 98756.
All right. Check out all those products and more on our website at asicentral.com/radio. Unfortunately, we are out of time for today, but thank you for listening, and thanks for our show sponsors today. And tune in again next week, same time, same place.
Bye.